Brought to you by Black Knight, it's the technology.ie podcast, episode 50 for November 15th, 2012, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinchon.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Dismariv, agus kith fáilte rovistach. Hello and welcome to technology.ie, the podcast. Michaela, it's our 50th.
I don't feel a day over 20 though, do you?
How cool is that? I feel like we've just started doing this. We're veterans, you know.
Well, we're kind of getting it. We're in the swing of it or something. I don't know.
We are. Do you think we'll get good at it someday?
I doubt that, but we'll keep trying.
Where are you off to, Michaela? You're in a hotel room again.
Yeah, I've got quite convoluted travel plans this time. I mean, I suppose me plus convoluted isn't such a strange concept. I'm off tomorrow to Belgrade and then on from Belgrade to Brussels. So I'm doing Dublin-Paris, Paris-Belgrade, Belgrade-Brussels, train from Brussels back to Paris, and then a flight back from Paris.
You told me about this a couple of weeks ago. This is the best way to do it for everything you want to get to, and works out cheaper in terms of flights to Dublin. Is that the idea?
Well, yeah. I mean, trying to do it another way would have doubled or if not trebled the price.
Right.
So this seemed to be the sanest way to do it. I'm in Belgrade tomorrow evening for the Webfest Awards. So if you remember, I was at the conference in Montenegro back in September.
Yeah.
And now the second half of the entire Webfest thing is the actual awards itself for all these kind of cool web-based projects, startups and apps and God knows what else coming out of the region. And then I'm on to Brussels for the .eu advisory board meeting.
Okay, you're on that board, is it?
I'm the chair of the board, dear.
All right, very good, very good.
I'm just on the board. Jeez, Con, what do you think I am?
And then you're going on the TGV.
I'm taking the TGV from Brussels back to Charles de Gaulle, because you can get a train directly to it. Mm. And assuming that everything runs on time and there aren't massive strikes anywhere, I'll do that and be able to get the flight back to Dublin.
Very civilised indeed. I imagine you as a kind of a TGV, or perhaps even an Orient Express kind of a gentleman, Michaela.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing. It's interesting you say that, because I was actually thinking about the Orient Express there not that long ago. I'd love to do it.
Very civilised.
I'd love to do that. I'd say that must be an experience.
It must be those photographs of you in your Panama hat, I think, that or the fedora. Is it a Panama hat or a fedora, those...
It was a Panama hat, which unfortunately, it was one of those crazy things. I was in Colombia in the kind of the main, one of the main squares there, and one of these vendors was flogging the hats. And anyway, I bought one, had it, I was wearing a suit, I was just doing a photo shoot for something, and had it for the day, had it for the evening, and then it got caught in a gust of wind that night when I was out somewhere and went off into the sea, never to be seen again.
And speaking of photographs, Michaela, I saw the one you posted on Facebook this week, which was your graduation photo.
Oh, that's nothing. One of my oldest friends, who I've known since I was like 12 years old, just posted a photo of the Middleton College under 13 rugby team, 1985-1986. So, you know, the graduation photo is one thing. This is on a whole new level of embarrassing photos.
So have these all gone into your timeline in the appropriate place on Facebook?
That one, no. No. The one of the graduation, no, I didn't. I don't think I tagged it with the correct date or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I could have done.
You'll have to do that. You will. So tell me about Webfest. Okay, so webfest.me, you were there, what, 4 weeks ago?
No, that's back in September.
Okay, a little bit longer than that. And now this is the Webfest.me Awards. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Okay. So
basically, they had a competition, which people, companies from the region could enter, and you know they're having the awards now. To be perfectly honest with you, I have to admit, I haven't really seen the list of nominees or the shortlist. I've seen a couple of things flying around. The problem is most of it's in Serbian, and my Serbian still sucks. So some of them were pitching and involved and speaking and everything else at the Webfest conference back in September. So there's a few of them there, the names are familiar. And some of them are pretty cool. Some of them you kind of scratch your head.
Speaking of Serbian, I've just used Google Translate. It says this page is in Serbian. Do you want to translate it? So why not? Fair enough. Looks good enough. It's, as I say, more or less has it. It does a nice job of translating from Serbian, I have to say. And what's your role there, Michele? Are you just a guest, just a visitor? Are you a VIP? Are you judging, presenting? What are you doing?
Well, I don't know. What would I be, really? No, I mean we're not officially anything at the moment. I mean I've been involved, with Webfest for the last couple of years, and you know I've got quite a lot of contacts in the region. So I'm going along to this since they invited me, and I think I want to see exactly what's going on and just get a better handle on things, really.
Right.
So no real official capacity.
Very good. Speaking of new things and new news, you broke some interesting news during the week on technology.ie.
Well, I'm still not sure whether we were the first, but I think we were one of the first. And this is in relation to Spotify launching in Ireland. Now, I've had a Spotify account since, I think, January of this year. I know a few other people have had accounts that long, if not longer. Because a few years back, Spotify was allowing Irish users to sign up, but then they locked it down, so you could only have access if you were in certain countries. Mm. But, you know, I've had a premium account and all that kind of thing. So now it's available to anybody in Ireland. And basically what it allows you to do, Con, is basically, you know, it's got millions and literally millions of tracks, albums, artists. It's a very open system as well, in terms of they've got an API and everything. So a lot of people are building applications around the Spotify platform. So let's say Rolling Stone, for example, or The Guardian, or so there's so many to choose from. You know, they're able to do is push out these applications with, you know, reviews and top lists and choices and all sorts of other things. And a lot of the record labels are doing it. And the cool thing is the record labels get a cut. So it's legal music, Con.
A cut of what, though, Michele? Because I've just visited the website. It says listen to millions of songs for free. Who's paying?
Oh, that's advertising.
Okay.
If you go down the free route, what'll happen is your listening experience will be interrupted every now and again with ads. It's a bit like the advertising you'd get on the radio or in podcasts and things like that.
Audio ads.
Yes, but they've
radio
also,
ads, Michele.
Yeah, but they've also got in-app advertising as well. I think. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, I'm just going to fire up Spotify here in the background.
So this is interesting. Yeah, go ahead, yeah?
Actually, it's not. It's loading. It's being a bit slow, but it is loading. You know, the thing is, they're able to monetize based on, you know, the advertising. I mean, if you think of them, if you've got millions of users, plus a lot of people like me are more than happy to pay for a premium account.
Absolutely. This is interesting because as somebody who works in the media business, as somebody who works in the audio production business and who works in the radio business, this is a new radio channel in Ireland, essentially, and it's a new market for advertisers.
It's much, much more than that, Con. It's much, much more than that, because if you sign up and get yourself a free account, and you'll download the software. It's available for Windows, Mac, and there's also a Linux version as well. You have the basic application, which has, you know, its own social sharing because it connects through to Facebook and things for certain functions. You can share what you're listening to with your Facebook friends, but be careful because you can spam the living hell out of their walls if you're not careful. But there's also this entire ecosystem, as I said, of all these apps and things that you can pull in so you can get this richer experience.
What kind of apps?
Well, maybe just fire up Spotify again. The most obvious one and the simplest one is probably Last.fm, if you haven't got it already. I mean, you know, if you're a Last.fm user, you'd have the app already on your computer. All you have to do is just log in with your Last.fm login details. Mm. And what it'll then do is, like, say, for example, if I go into my Last.fm here on Spotify, it'll give an overview of the stuff I've been listening to, and then based on that, it'll go, "Hey, have you listened? How about listening to some of this stuff? Here's some recommendations for you," and you can go off and you explore all sorts of new music. I mean, looking at some of the apps I've got installed, I've got, some of them are using social media. So, for example, there's one, and what it does is it pulls in the artists and the tracks that people are talking most about on Twitter, for example. Mm. There's a Rolling Stone recommendations one. There's a one from Time Warner. Blue Note, you know, the jazz and blues guys. Def Jam, who you may have heard of. There's The Guardian. I've also got that. Mood Agent's a really cool concept where you can get it to generate playlists based on how you're feeling. So if you're feeling a little bit down, or if you want something a bit upbeat, or, you know, whatever, you tell it how you're feeling and it'll generate a playlist based on that.
So, for example, I mean, could you get Irish traditional folk and maybe American folk, country and bluegrass on it or something like that?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, you can get pretty much anything, not absolutely everything, but pretty much anything. So let's say, let's try the Chieftains, for example. Mm. Just as a kind of an obvious one. So I bring up the Chieftains, and they've got their 2012 album, Voice of Ages, is there in its entirety, the Essential Chieftains from 2006. Mm. I keep scrolling down, and it's got stuff back as far as, well, they don't have the full catalogue, but they have a fairly good cross-section of the Chieftains' back catalogue.
What about Martin Hayes?
Let's see. That's Martin, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
H-A-Y-E-S.
E-S. Let's see. Martin Hayes, Ireland-born and Seattle-based Martin Hayes is a master of the slow, lyrical, Clare style of fiddling.
Yeah.
Live in Seattle, 1999. The Lonesome Touch, 1997.
It's all there.
And all the way back as far as... Yeah, I mean, this is a fairly... I don't know how... I'm not really familiar with the guy, so I can't really
see that. Yeah, no, but I mean, that sounds... The Lonesome Touch certainly is a fantastic album. That sounds very, very interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I don't know what it is, Michaela. I've never kind of got into this social music or this, I suppose, mood. I don't know what you call it exactly. For example, we talked about Last.fm on this podcast before, Michaela, for example.
Yeah.
And you mentioned it again there. So is this not the same as Last.fm? How is it different? How do they complement each other?
Okay, Last.fm, how do I put this? Last.fm will keep track of what you've listened to. Mm-hmm. And it's got everything is categorized in some ways. I mean, if you think of it a bit like taxonomies, in that, you know, you're tagging stuff and everything else. So it can build up an idea of the type of music you listen to, which artists you listen to, and then based on that, it'll suggest other artists to you. You can't use Last.fm to listen to, say, the entire back catalogue of Matt Malloy, for example.
But you can with Spotify.
Yes.
Right.
So I can go into Spotify. I don't own a single recording by Matt Malloy. I have no Matt Malloy recordings on this device here. I have absolutely nothing by him, yet I can access his top five hits. The Mason's Apron seemingly is his top hit. And a bunch of his albums are on here. And if I don't really like him, I can go in and I can find something else. But, you know, the point is I can listen to an entire album if I want to.
So Last.fm will ask me to choose a genre or a mood or a style of music, for example, and it'll learn my tastes in terms of how I vote and what I choose
it's much more passive than that.
Okay,
Tom. Like you, if you have the Last.
How does Last.fm learn what I like?
Well, if you let me explain.
Sure.
So let's say you're listening to music using iTunes.
Yeah.
You can get a Last.fm plugin for iTunes, basically.
Okay, that's right, yeah.
And what it'll do is it'll keep track of what you're listening to. You don't do anything. It, when you start iTunes, it will start the Last.fm application. And it keeps track of everything you're listening to. And then, based on that, it will then make recommendations to you.
Okay, so it works on the basis of the music collection I have and how I choose to listen to it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Whereas...
Then you can go up and you can discover new stuff based on what you've listened to.
Whereas Spotify is like having a great big iPod. Is that the idea?
It's more than that, Colm. It's like having the entire, every single iPod on the planet in one place.
So I can choose what I listen to. I can listen to it as much as I like. If I'm going free, it's going to play an ad for me every now and again. Otherwise, I can pay a subscription. Is that it?
Yeah. If you pay the subscription for it, then you get a whole load of extra things. So, for example, there's an apps for the iPhone and the iPad, and you can do things like say, right, you know, I want to be able to listen to some of this stuff when I'm offline. So what it'll do is it will sync stuff down for you.
I think I'm going to like this. It's funny. I think it might have been a year, 2 years ago that it started in the UK. Is that correct? Or in
in
Europe somewhere?
It's Swedish or something.
Okay.
I think it's a Scandinavian country. Now, I could be a bit wrong there.
But it's been available in the UK for a long time, and then I think a year, 2 years ago, it was made available in the States, and I remember at the time the reaction from the people in the States when it was made available there was quite enthusiastic. I'm beginning to see why.
It is really, really cool.
This is something I could go for. I think I'll be downloading. I won't download it now because I'll interfere with our connection here, but I'm definitely
going to try. What I'd say to you, Con, is this. Look, grab a free account. They have a very nice thing where, I mean, it's pretty obvious why they do it. They let you get access to the premium, one of the premium accounts for a limited period of time. And then after 30 days or something, you revert back to the free one. But, I mean, the unlimited account is only $4.99 a month. If you go with the premium account, you also get it on your mobile. Plus, you can take your playlists offline.
Oh, wait a second. So the free account doesn't work on mobile.
No.
Okay, and that's an issue there, as far as I would be concerned, because.
Yeah, but it's to be honest, Colm. Look, it's $9.99 a month for the. It's $9.99 a month for the premium one. I mean, listen. If you download it and you like it, I'll buy you a Apple account, you know, just to shut you up.
Yeah, I know. As I say, it's interesting. I guess I'm just always looking for what the best. And you know, I'm committed to certain things that I use that I find effective and useful.
It must be an age thing, Colm. It must be an age thing.
What do you mean?
You're getting set in your ways.
Yeah, well, no, it's not even that. I'm kind of particular about certain things, and one of them is that when I'm at a computer, I'm usually working, you know.
Right.
Which is why, for example, as I think I've said before, I'm a huge fan of podcasts, but I only listen to them in a mobile app on my phone. So I'm synced up to certain feeds, certain RSS feeds. Do you remember that word, RSS? But it's still there behind the scenes. But as I say, the stuff, you know, I listen to stuff while I'm driving, while I'm walking, while I'm doing whatever I'm doing, while I'm on the move, and definitely music. That's how I'm going to access music as well. I'm interested in this without a doubt, Michaela. There's been a lot of talk about Spotify, and I guess we're about to find out why. Go ahead.
Just after we finish with this, download it. So, you know, sign up, download it, play around with it a bit. I think it's an absolutely fantastic service. I mean, since I've signed up and had a premium account, which is, you know, the full shimole, which is $9.99 a month, I've still bought some music. Hmm. I've still bought some CDs and things like that because I've only got a CD player in the car. Plus, as well, if you're taking airplanes and things like that, you know, it's just that little bit easier to have something you can rip to whatever and, you know, copy across to your iPod or or iRiver. But I definitely have spent a lot more time listening to music that I wouldn't listen to normally. And I, you know, I'm paying for it. It's great. And I love it. I'm a total addict.
Interesting. I'm definitely going to try it out. And as you say, people, you know, the artists are actually getting paid. The music companies are getting paid out of this. Although I've heard not as much as they make from CDs, radio play, even other areas. Spotify, I think, is not a great earner for the musicians. I could be wrong on that now. Had you heard that before?
Look, the thing is this, Colin. Look, it's the kind of thing that it solves the problem.
Mm.
And the problem is this. For a negligible fee per month, because let's face it, $9.99 a month if you go with the full on thing, or what is it, $4.99 a month for the one which doesn't give you the mobile.
Mm.
Sure, that's, I don't know. I mean, that works out. I mean, it's nothing. It's only a couple of cents a day.
Yeah,
and that means you have full access to absolutely everything. You've got good quality. You don't have to go faffing about and worrying about, you know, how am I going to access this? Am I going to get sent a nasty gram by somebody? You know, is the quality of the recording going to be up to scratch? And the answer is yes. Yes, it is.
And you mentioned
the quality.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's fantastic. Well, the quality of the recordings is absolutely perfect.
Well, I'm going to be trying it out without a doubt on Windows and on Mac. And I was impressed to see that they have a Linux client as well. You blog that as well on technology.ie.
Of course.
Which is very progressive and forward-thinking and very cool indeed. Halo 4, Michele, you've blogged that as well. $220 million in 24 hours. These game launches are like movie premieres nowadays.
They're bigger.
That's right.
They're actually bigger. It's insane. The amount of money that a big game launch can earn is beyond something else. And the thing is this, Tom. You look at how much those games are going for, say, on Xbox. I mean, you're looking at minimum €40 for an Xbox game these days.
Yeah.
Absolute minimum. Now, sure, the prices will drop once the game's been out a few months or whatever. But, you know, everybody wants the game as soon as it comes out. And the thing is, these are not for kids. Like, practically, I wouldn't say everybody I know, but a disproportionately large number of my friends in industry are gamers.
Yeah.
They might not be, you know, hardcore gamers, but they're gamers.
And there's a lot more of them besides them who you probably wouldn't class as being in the industry, Michele, but they're gamers as well. And there's no question about the size of the audience. And I suppose if you compare that €40 that you'd spend on a game to what you'd spend on cinema tickets and then work out how many hours of entertainment you get out of it relative to the 90 minutes, 100 minutes maybe that you'd spend in a cinema theatre, it's good value. It's not surprising that it earns what it earns and that people pay what they pay.
Well, let's think of this. I'm looking here now. The one we're talking about, Halo 4, is from Play. It's showing here as €51.49, including free delivery.
Right.
Now that's the one that's already out. Now there's also the release of Call of Duty Black Ops 2, which should be out now, but I haven't seen anything about it yet. And they were expecting that to be a bumper in terms of sales. Mm. And that is, at the low end, it's €56.99, including delivery. But if you were to go for one of the box sets or one of the super-duper elite versions, or, I don't know, there's a whole load of different ways of buying the damn thing, you could easily end up spending around €100.
Are you a gamer, Michele? What do you play on?
I'm not a serious gamer. Mm. I do play on the Xbox from time to time. And to be perfectly honest, I actually haven't turned on my Xbox for the last couple of months. But,
I'm surprised you get time.
Well,
with everything you're doing, coming and going and traveling. It's something we're going to be finding out more about, I think, in this house, because the kids are getting older and more into games and stuff like that. Definitely not old enough for the likes of what some of these games are like, but in due course, it's interesting. Actually, the other day, one of the kids came home and showed me Happy Wheels. Have you played that?
Or have you
heard of it? He said he's funny. He said he'd been playing it in school, you know. So I said, okay, fair enough. You know, let's, you know, show me what this is, because we have a PC set up really in the sitting room now. They used to have a laptop in the corner, but now that we have our digital TV through a media center, a PC running Windows and media center with Windows 7 there, I suppose the PC is more center stage and front of house in the sitting room now. So he was showing me this. He said he'd been playing this in school, in his teacher's classroom the other day, and I thought, oh yeah, fine, this looks good, this looks fine. And then it's a kind of a game where you choose your character. They're scrolling left to right in a kind of a race and encountering all kinds of obstacles. There's one of the game he chose to show me was based on Wipeout. I presume you've seen Wipeout. Is it called Wipeout? It is Wipeout, yes.
The film?
No. It's one of these sort of obstacle course games where they get people to run through various obstacle courses, and they can fall into a pool and they have to climb.
I'm not a gamer, Colin.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, but as I say, I'm not much of a one either. The kids are big into the Nintendo DS and Mario and stuff like that that they play. But as I say, this was all going interestingly well. This was all fair enough until the character my son chose was riding a Segway. Fair enough. Until he comes a cropper, and when he does, it's blood and guts everywhere. And what looked like an instant enough kind of a game turned into something which I'm not entirely sure was suitable for an 8-year-old, although he thought it was very funny. So I had to turn it off before his mother saw it. But it's interesting, Michaela, as I say, this is something I'm going to have to more and more engage with. And I mean, I know myself, going back years ago, I would have played, you know, I would have got into playing some things like Doom and Quake and things like that. But it's definitely something we're going to be finding out more about in this house. Let's move on. Also blogged or also talked about this week on technology.ie, Australian court finds Google guilty of defamation. Why, Michele?
Now, this is really, really scary, like on so many levels. I mean, the permutations of this. Now, I'd need to get somebody with, you know, a legal degree to have a look at the actual full decision, because at the moment we're only getting the media coverage, so we don't know exactly what words the judge used. But it's down to the juxtaposition of a person in search results. In other words, Googling for this person, they came up alongside photos and other references to a criminal.
Okay, right. So the
argument being put forward was that as Google was the one making this association, they were defaming the person in question.
And did the guy have the same name as the criminal? We don't know that, do we?
No. I mean, if you actually follow the links there, there's some coverage on one of the Australian newspapers. But the thing is, this guy, he's taken two cases, one against Google, one against Yahoo. The Yahoo one, I mean, you know, it's Yahoo. Unfortunately for Yahoo, you know, stuff happens with them and we don't really notice or care. Stuff happens with Google and everybody talks about it. Same thing with Yahoo, but it's down to, you know, these search engine results. So, you know, showing photos of a well-known criminal alongside the name of this person.
So I mean, there's a lot of questions here, and they don't appear to have been answered in the article that you've linked to either, Michele, in relation to this. But there's a few things I don't get. I mean, was this guy himself, was he prominent in some way? Why was he Googling his own name for a start? Is he someone who you would Google? Is he someone who's, I mean, for example, there's a quite, you know, the libel and defamation laws in this country are they, you know, they were reformed recently. They have quite a distinct particular definition, and the definition of defamation in under Irish law currently is, and I'm paraphrasing, I can't remember the exact details, but it is if you somehow report or make an association in relation to an individual which would which you publish something about that individual which would tend to diminish him in the eyes of his peers. Now, that's a pretty robust and a pretty sound definition of defamation. So, and I know, Michaela, I'm not putting you on the spot here, and I'm not saying that you're a legal expert or anything like that, but this raises more questions, this story, for me than it answers, because I cannot imagine an algorithm for some reason displaying someone's displaying a particular picture in the context of a search on the man's name. I can't imagine that being defamatory under Irish law, is what I'm saying, Michaela.
No, it would be. First off, you've got a misunderstanding about how defamation law in Ireland works.
Right.
Defamation under Irish law, you, as the alleged defamer, have to prove that you did not defame.
Okay.
So the burden of proof is on you.
Correct.
As opposed to in other jurisdictions where the burden is either equally shared or is on the one making the accusation.
Fair enough. So it might be easier than I think to defame someone in Ireland, even with that definition and in that situation.
No, but Con, I think you're missing the entire thing here. It doesn't matter a damn what you think about algorithms. That's irrelevant.
Hmm.
Because a judge has decided that defense would not hold up. And that is the problem. That is the scary aspect of this, because you can say, yes, you know, Google uses an algorithm. Google algorithm randomly did X, Y, and Z for whatever reason, yada, yada, yada. And that's fine. But the judge did not accept that.
Hmm.
So the problem is, depending on the wording that the judge has used, then you could end up in a situation where Google ends up having to defend itself against a lot more of these cases.
Right. And another thing that has come up recently in relation to that has been the auto-suggest results as well. That has been something which, I don't know if there's been a case in relation to that, but I know someone has tried to bring a case on that, haven't they? Where they've Googled their name, or a company has Googled its name, and one of the suggested search word combinations that comes up is something that is perhaps defamatory, or at the very least diminishing.
Negative, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, negative.
Negative. I mean, it's like if you go to the Google homepage and you start typing in any word, it will probably start to offer you suggestions on the completion. It depends on your settings, as far as I know. So let's say, if I start typing my name, it'll automatically start off. It'll start doing things like suggesting Black Knight blog, Twitter.
Are you sure you want to do this, Michele?
Oh yeah. Now there's actually nothing else coming up. It's not making any other suggestions for me. Let's see. Can we choose somebody? I don't know. Can you think of somebody who's dead because they can't sue? Elvis Presley. Let's choose Elvis Presley. So let's say you start choosing Elvis Presley is actually it's not doing anything for me.
Is alive, is now or never, is from, and this one could be considered defamatory if the man was alive. Elvis Presley is racist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's not. He's not alive, so. I mean, sure, his estate might have some ability to sue, but, you know, it's a bit limited.
Yeah.
I mean, the entire thing, though, is that it's a chilling effect, potentially.
Well,
you could end up in a situation where Google ends up having to defend itself against a lot of these court cases. And even if it wins, it'll still cost us a lot of money to go to court and defend itself.
Well, again, I suppose maybe the you'd imagine perhaps there may be a technological solution to this. There may be, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this is, of course, how law develops. And you've got to put yourself for a moment as well. We have to do this, Michele, put yourself for the moment in the shoes of this man who took the case, who maybe felt that, you know, the internet, Google, social media, all of this, algorithms are human generated or otherwise, are now so pervasive. They're now so much a part of media that you know, that he felt, you know, whether justified or not, he felt that he felt defamed, and the judge obviously agreed with him up to a point.
Yeah, exactly. That's the entire thing.
Yes, I mean, so I wouldn't be so concerned about there being a chilling effect here. In one sense, I would say, you know, fair enough. This is something that both the law and the technology will have to adapt to deal with.
Yeah, okay, but the thing is, Con, you've got to remember there are people out there who have a lot of time on their hands,
yes,
and who will, you know, use this. I mean, as it is, as a hosting provider, we get sent all sorts of spurious complaints. All the bloody time. And they're completely spurious, and they're completely without any rhyme, reason, logic, or anything else. But the problem is that, you know, in our case, most of those don't proceed that far. But in some cases, we still have to get legal counsel to handle them.
Hmm. Well, what about the...
We're a much smaller fish, Con.
Indeed, yeah. Indeed. I mean, this was a judgment worth $250,000 Australian, Michele. I'm not entirely sure what the exchange rate is, but...
It's a fair chunk of change.
Yeah, yeah. What about the practice of Google bombing and Google washing, Michele? I don't know if you know where people attempt to organize some kind of crowdsource a campaign where... What was the one in relation to George W. Bush? And I know Google have taken, he showed up in the search results for the term miserable failure, I think.
Something like that.
Which was, and I know Google have taken steps to make this more difficult now, but again...
It's still possible.
But again, that shows you really the kind of response that Google made, is that they felt that they could be liable in a case where there was an orchestrated campaign like this leading to a result where somebody's name was associated with a particularly negative search term. It's obviously, I don't know if there were any cases in that case, but it just shows it's a similar kind of a thing. Let's move on, Michele. What else were we going to talk about? We're going to talk about help.me. In relation to Hurricane Sandy. So, and it's funny, you're heading off, as we say, to Belgrade, to the dock.
I'm going to be close to Montenegro, but I'm not actually going to be in Montenegro.
So that's one of these. Dot me is one of these. That is one of these names, I suppose, that's associated with a domain like dot me that would be considered a premium one. If you think like help me, you know, anything me that is, I suppose, particularly resonant as this one is going to be one that they would have regarded as a premium one. And they've put it to use in the service of victims of Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah, it's very, very, very simple. Help me says it all. Help me. I mean, I don't know. Do I need to explain that? No, obviously.
No.
It's a clear action domain. It's a call to action. Yes, it's a premium name. It's one of the reserve names. And the guys in .me, they do a lot of stuff in the US, obviously. And, you know, they're really nice, genuine people. I mean, I say this, you know, you've spoken to Natasha. Lovely,
indeed,
lovely woman.
Yeah.
They're all fantastic. And what they thought to themselves, you know, we've got these names. We'd love to do something to help those impacted by hurricane/superstorm/whatever the hell they're calling it this week, Sandy. Why not do something using this? So what they did is they put up a very, very simple site. It's not the site itself. It's not a beautiful work of art or anything. It's very, very simple. Something that threw up very quickly. And what you can do there is you can go on. There's information about what's been going on in terms of of New York and other parts of the eastern seaboard of the U.S. has been impacted by the hurricane / superstorm / whatever the hell they're calling it. And you can donate directly from there to the American Red Cross and a couple of other charities.
Looks interesting. In the wake of Hurricane Sandy, it says the .me registry would like to call on all of our online partners who are suffering, to join us in donating time, money and or goods to the people of New York and New Jersey who are suffering in the aftermath of the storm. They say, although we are located in Montenegro, we have a special relationship with the city of New York as it is home to many of our partners and friends. And this is a website where people can essentially offer help.
Well, no, you just click on the donate button.
Yeah.
And what it'll do is it'll bring up a little pop-up, and you've got you can go then to the American Red Cross, the United Way, AmeriCares, the ASPCA, or log into iTunes. Because as we mentioned, I think it was last week or the week before, iTunes in the US now has the option to donate to charities via iTunes.
Okay.
So, I mean, it'll primarily work for people based in the U.S., but I just thought it was a cool idea. And what was also interesting was that for a few days now, I think it ended yesterday or the day before, maybe, every .me domain name that was registered starting on, I think it was Thursday afternoon through till yesterday or the day before, the .me registry was going to donate $1 to charity.
Very nice.
And it's a nice, simple thing to do, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And let's face it, it's good corporate PR, it's good social responsibility, and it is, I suppose, a clever way of doing it. And also, let's face it, a way of highlighting, I suppose, that call to action, which is inherent in the whole idea of the .me registry and what that particular pronoun enables you to do. What?
Oh, dear.
What's wrong?
My school friend has found his scanner. So now a high res, clear version of the photo of the 1985-86 under 13 rugby team is now on Facebook.
Isn't that extraordinary? Isn't that extraordinary? I don't know if you were listening. I was listening this morning to the John Murray Show on Radio 1, and Roddy Doyle was the guest, who's always an interesting guy. And, you know, very often when I hear some of these established writers, authors and that, and very often when you hear them talk about the internet, they get so, so patronizing about it, you know what I mean? And I know that some of them, and I'm not counting Roddy Doyle in this, and I'll tell you why in a moment, but I know that some of them talk about how, you know, well, just anyone can publish nowadays. Isn't that absolutely horrific, you know? But Roddy Doyle, in fairness to him, was not like that this morning. He was talking about how he had been skeptical of Facebook, and he had started to write a novel in which the central character, who's Jimmy Rabbit, you remember The Commitments and all that, Michaela?
Yes, yes.
Jimmy
yes.
Rabbit's in his 40s now. I don't think this has been published yet, but Roddy Doyle was explaining it this morning. So Jimmy Rabbit, who was the young guy who was the manager of The Commitments, is now well into his 40s, and he has some kind of a business. I can't recall what it is, but he decided he needed a Facebook page for it, and that is one of the plot points in relation to this latest Jimmy Rabbit novel. But Roddy Doyle was saying how he didn't know anything about Facebook, and he had to research it, and he went off and got on it. And one of the things that has resulted is that he is now writing short little snippets of fiction in the form of a dialogue between two characters sitting in a pub discussing some of the current events that are going on in Ireland at the time. And he's been writing this and publishing it for free on Facebook and getting quite an interesting response. So I always get excited. I always like it when I suppose established writers and authors find their way into use something positive with this new media. But he said one of the things that interested and excited him about Facebook was the discovery that people he had been friends with, past pupils from the days when he was a
teacher. Sorry, one second, Colm.
What is that noise? Such a thing to intrude on our technological podcast here. I presume Michele has muted us at the other end. By the way, listeners, Michele is not at his home this evening. He's on his... Well, we did mention that. He's in, I think, the Dublin Airport Hilton Hotel in Dublin at the moment, and that is where he is. So that must be his supper arriving.
Not my supper arriving, Colm. It's the reception desk to let me know that the function which has resulted in a load of people parking their cars here is kind of finishing up. So some of the car park spaces are now free.
Oh.
So I can move my car to a more suitable location.
Oh, very good. Do you want to run off and do that, or will it do until we're finished?
No. Yeah. It'll hold. Fair enough. The stupid thing is, as soon as the people from the function have gone, the hotel car park will probably be practically empty.
Of course. So we must and express our appreciation to the people in the Dublin Airport Hilton, Michaela, because I know I was harshly critical of them the last time we did this podcast when you were there, because the Wi-Fi was awful. But this connectivity is fantastic this evening.
It's working. Let's not jinx it.
No, that's true. Sorry, I was going off on a big rant there about Roddy Doyle and Facebook. But no, it was just he liked the whole notion of the fact that it puts you in contact with people that you haven't been in touch with for 30 years, what is it? Almost 30 years in the case of the under-13 Middleton College rugby team, Michele? In your case?
I mean, there's a bunch of people I went to school with that I'm only in contact with now via Facebook.
Mm.
It's kind of odd because, I mean, there's a bunch of them, so that's kind of going back, you know, a good few years. I've no real contact with anybody then apart from one or two people for any period of time after that. There's a great big gap. So there's other periods of my life and I've no contact with them at all.
Do you think they're avoiding you, Michaela? That's crossed my mind in relation to Facebook, because there are large chunks of my life where I'm not in contact with people, and I suppose if it hadn't been for Facebook, I wouldn't have expected to. But certain areas of my life that I imagine that I might be running into people nowadays on Facebook, and they're not there. They're not online. They must be blocking me already. Let's move on. We'll talk about the Black Knight News of the Week. We were talking about the .me registry, and you've got a special offer on .me domains this week.
Yeah, what this is probably the best promotion, biggest promotion, most generous promotion. I'm running out of words here, that we've done on .me in a good while. If you buy an annual Minimus plan, which is our entry-level plan, details on minimus.me, you can get a .me domain name for the first year for a mere €3.99. Dirt cheap, man. Dirt cheap.
Very good. You can find out more about that and other Black Knight offers at domainoffers.me. You're listening to Technology.ie, the podcast brought to you by Black Knight, presented by Black Knight Managing Director Michaela Nealon. That's him over there. My name's Conor Muinicon here in the Edgecast Media Studios, and we have got one or two more stories to talk about in this week's podcast. The IE Domain Registry, Michaela, we talked about several weeks ago. They've issued a statement in relation to the hijacking of the Google.ie and Yahoo.ie domain names, and they are acknowledging that there was a security breach at IEDR.
Yes, I mean I'm not going to say much about it. I mean, you can read it if you put a link to it in the notes. I think the statement speaks louder than words, really. It covers it pretty comprehensively.
In what way? Or specifically in the sense that initially there was confusion as to whether it was the registrar, being the company who registered the .ie domain name with IEDR, or the registry being IEDR themselves, which was at fault. They've said that it was not the fault of the registrar, or it was not the breach did not occur at the registrar end, and that it was at their end, and a Garda criminal investigation is continuing.
Yeah, I mean, they basically said that, you know, the issue was on their end, that there were problems on their end. Mm. That's what happened. And if you actually look at the statement, they go into some detail on that.
Problem was with their content management system.
Mm-hmm.
Joomla they were using on their website. I guess, I mean, I don't know, I'm not qualified to say really, Michele, but it does seem like we'll wait and see. Is that what you'd like to say?
I'm not saying anything.
All right.
Okay, I mean, there's like, I'd say just have a read over it. You can draw your own conclusions.
We'll link to it on the technology.ie site, and maybe, as I say, probably more will be issued and more will come out in due course in relation to it. All right. Let's move on, Michele. Next thing you wanted to highlight this week is in relation to Pinterest, and they've got some new tools for business.
Yeah, this is an interesting move because, I mean, one of the things like a lot of these social networks seem to struggle with, I mean, I think we've said this several times in the past, we'll probably end up saying it again in the future, is, you know, how do you get a business model out of it? How do you get the balance right between businesses and non-business users, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Pinterest up until now didn't have a specific business account type. You know, you could sign up for Pinterest and that was it. And like, I ended up with two accounts, one for myself, one for the company. But they launched these new tools for businesses. I think that might actually have been earlier today. And what you can do is you can convert your account over to being a business account, and you then get to do certain things like you can validate your domain name, and they're putting front and center a few tools for you to promote your content on Pinterest. It'll be interesting to see what they do with this, because, you know, it's one thing to you know, sort out something for businesses. It's another thing to see exactly how that's going to work in terms of, you know, both for both sides of it. I mean, you know, how's it going to work for the business users, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought it was worth mentioning because it's one of those things. I think quite a few companies are playing around with Pinterest and they're not 100% sure what to do with it. But I think it's one of those things that you'd be stupid to ignore it.
Are you sure what to do with it?
Well, for our line of business, it's a bit awkward because we don't sell physical goods. We're not in... I mean, it's the kind of thing where I'm seeing a lot of activity from companies that sell, you know, physical goods. I mean, gadgets, gizmos, cool stuff that looks interesting.
You can't exactly pin a photograph of your latest Blade servers and say, hey, you could have some, you could have a virtual server on this hardware, for example.
Well, we could. We could do that.
Yeah.
That's about as much as we could do. I mean, sure, what we have been doing is posting, you know, some of the graphics we might use for advertising, some of the infographics we come across, those kind of things. But you know, it's a little bit of a challenge for us to do this. But what I am seeing is, if you go on to sites where there's a lot of visual content, I mean, like, I'm just looking here now. Just going to the home page on Pinterest at the moment, logged in under the company account. I've got photos of lingerie. I've got screenshots of stuff. I've got photos of food. You know, and some of the stuff you can see, you know, like, say, for example, with clothes, lingerie, all that kind of thing. You know, if you want to, you know, put something front and center, you know, this is a new design we've got, or if you're selling funny T-shirts, or if you're a photographer and you want to sell prints of your photos. I mean, you know, there's a lot of those kind of things. It's pretty obvious. I mean, for other types of businesses, I can see, you know, it's a little bit more challenging. But hey, you know, you play around with it. You can work out, you know, there might be some way you can leverage it. I mean, I have the same problem with Foursquare as a business owner.
Pardon?
You know, it's a little bit challenging.
It is, yeah, because your location is not your selling point there either. In fact, it's entirely irrelevant to your customers where your physical location is. You're not going to want to check into Black Knight's offices in Carlow. Well, you might, but
I mean, people do. Because it's an office, I can't run a special based on check-ins.
Right. Yeah.
But let's say, for example, I'm here in this hotel. I mean, there's nothing special being run in the Hilton here in Dublin Airport. But if you go to certain other Hiltons in other cities, you know, check in on Foursquare and you might get, oh, I don't know, a free drink at the bar or something. You know, there's a lot of the hotels have actually been doing it. So check in on Foursquare to our hotel and we'll give you X number of points, you know, the frequent stay points, that kind of thing.
Yeah. very good.
Yeah, so for Pinterest, I think it's just interesting to see what they'll do. I mean, they've come up with a few gizmos and stuff, and I'd say that it's going to... it's something to keep an eye on.
Well, from your point of view, can I ask you this, Michele, as you know, whether or not it's probably not as useful to Black Knight as maybe some other social services are, but as someone in particular who has made a point of and indeed won awards for your use of social media in marketing your business, does this latest announcement by Pinterest, these business accounts, does it tick the boxes in terms of what you've determined are, I suppose, the minimum requisites? For example, things like the ability to be able to assign multiple individual staff members as administrators of your page.
Not yet.
Okay, so they've a way to go then in the relation to
that. Oh yeah, no, totally. But yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's a move in the right direction. I mean, realistically speaking, I mean, Facebook has it. I mean, you've got the multiple users. Google Plus has it, multiple users. But to be able to do that, say, on Twitter, I mean, Twitter obviously is massive. Twitter itself, they played around with it, but they never really launched it. I've no idea what the hell happened to this thing with the multiple user stuff that they were playing around with, I think maybe even a year or 18 months ago.
Yeah.
I mean, to be able to leverage that kind of stuff these days, you have to use a third-party application, which is annoying, to say the least.
Let's wrap it up, Michele. There's one more story which I snuck in there at the end there into our agenda for tonight. Ono Suluwan, who's a social media marketing expert who works for Bord Gáis, if he still does. I think he does do their social marketing for them, and I follow him on Twitter. And I saw him tweet this during the week. A company called Replay have come out with something they call Social Denim. And I like the headline in a blog called Ecouter, Replay Social Denim lets you update your Facebook status on the fly. That's a pretty bad pun, Michele.
Yeah, I mean, I've no idea even what to say about that. I mean, it's just...
You know, it's fad of the week, Michele, is what it is. Fad du jour, probably more than anything else. It's not even that they've come up with some special kind of weave that involves some kind of social media connectivity. It's a Bluetooth pocket, is what it is, and it pairs with your mobile phone. And I'm not sure even what it is. Let me just read this. Due to hit the stores in December, each pants features an extra fifth pocket that contains a Bluetooth-connected transmitter. Pair the device with a smartphone, and you can use one of a series of buttons to broadcast your mood and or current location in the blink of an eye. We'd ask why, but the company would probably just respond with why not.
think of it this way. I mean, it's... Even if it's the most ridiculous thing ever, it's got us talking about it.
It has, yeah. No, so absolutely. And this site has really, I think, pulled out all the stops in relation to puns. I've got to give you one more, Michele, and I think we'll leave you with this. So they've asked us to vote then in a poll as to whether we think social denim is haute or not. That is as in haute couture or not. And on that note, Michele, I bid you good night.
Good night.
Slán go fóill.
Slán.